Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to RD People Health and Wellbeing conference call to discuss its first quarter of 2017 results. The audio for this conference is being broadcast simultaneously through the internet in the website www.rd.com.br/ir. In that address, you can also find the slideshow presentation available for download. We inform that all participants will only be able to listen to the conference during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are over, there will be a Q&A period. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this conference, please press star zero for an operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward-looking statements are being made under the safe harbor of the Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1996. Forward-looking statements are based on the beliefs and assumptions of RD management and all information currently available to the company. Forward-looking statements are not guarantees of performance. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of RD and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Today with us are Mr. Marcilio Pousada, CEO, Mr. Eugênio De Zagottis, Investor Relations and Corporate Planning Vice President, and Gabriel Rosenberg, IR and Corporate Planning Director. Now, I'll turn the conference over to Mr. Marcilio Pousada. Sir, you may begin your conference.
Hello. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the presentation of results, the second quarter 2017, RD. As always, Eugênio will present the numbers, and I will stress some points about the results. Eugênio, please.
Hello, everybody. Thank you all for attending RD's second quarter conference call. Obviously, this is a quarter in which we face a very strong comp base from last year, an impossible comp base because of the inflationary gain on inventories. Obviously, we knew at some point this quarter would come, we'll have to face it, but there's no surprise in here. Having said that, I think we achieved a very strong expense dilution that allowed us to successfully navigate this pressure and to end up with a margin EBITDA that made us happy. The highlights for the quarter, we ended the period with 1,506 stores in operation. We opened 54 stores in the quarter and closed another five stores. Our gross revenues reached 3.4 billion, 16% revenue growth with 6.1% retail same-store sales growth. Our gross margin reached 29.4%, 2.1 percentage point decrease over the peak of last year, with 301 million of EBITDA, a margin of 8.9% and a 150 basis points margin pressure from last year. Our net income reached 138 million with 4.1% of net margin, and we had a negative free cash flow of 65 million with 134 negative total cash flow. On page four, as I mentioned, we ended the period with 1,506 stores. We opened in the quarter 54 new stores and closed five stores. If we compare the full first semester with last year, we are exactly in the same pace, and we reiterate the guidance of 200 gross new stores for this year. Here on the right, we had this quarter the greenest store base since the second quarter 2013, with 36% of stores still undergoing maturation. This provides a lot of residual growth in the future. On page five, we can discuss here our geographic presence. Of the 1,506 stores that we had by the end of the quarter, 715 were Raia, 768 Drogasil, 20 were Farmazil, and three were 4Bio. I will highlight here that we reached more than 850 stores in São Paulo and 115 stores in the Northeast. This is a story that started 4 years ago, so 4 or 5 years ago, So it's a pretty nice pace of expansion. Our market share grew consistently in four of the five markets where we operate. We gained 80 bps in national market share. In São Paulo, we gained 70 bps. In the Southeast, we gained 40 bps. In the South, 60 bps. And in the Northeast, 130 bps. The only market we lost share was in the Midwest, because last year, at this exact moment, we had a competitor in Brasilia in a distress situation without any inventories and so on. So obviously, that company was bought by Profarma, and now they have inventories. As much as we may be skeptical about the profitability and growth potential, but the fact that it now has inventories affects our growth. The great thing here is that we increased massively our revenues per store over that period, and have been able to sustain the bulk of that revenue increase. So for us, it's been very positive. On page six, let's start talking about the revenue growth. We post a consolidated revenue increase of 16%, with 15% for retail and 47% for 4Bio. When we look at our mix within retailing, the highlight was the pharma categories, especially generics, which grew 17.7%, OTC 17%, and branded 15.9%. HPC grew 10.8%. There is an effect of the Zika virus pandemic last year that we had, so we had a high comp base, especially in April. But structurally, HPC is not growing at the same pace of the rest of the mix. So there is an effect of the crisis that shows up here. Page 7, when we our consolidated revenue growth, as I mentioned, was 16%, with 6.1% for same-store sales and 2% for mature stores. Here it's important to make a distinction. We had a very challenging month in April when we had three holidays in a single month, which is highly unusual and affected the sales of the month in a major way. I mean, it looked like an Olympic month or a World Cup month. But the thing is, when we put together the average for May and June, numbers were completely normal. So we grew 17.4% on a consolidated basis with 3.4% for mature stores. And it's important to highlight that the CPI is 3%. So our mature stores is growing ahead of inflation. So obviously the April effect is a one-time pressure that will normalize, maybe around 17%. So we are still posting a healthy structural growth with mature stores growing slightly ahead of inflation. Obviously, when you compare to previous quarters, we see a nominal deceleration, but it's completely related to inflation. So if you're talking 17% growth with 3% of inflation, we're talking 14% real growth. I mean, this is this is very similar to what we did last year when inflation was 9%, for example. So it's a total normal number, with the exception of the calendar of April that generated a pressure here. Margin. So we had this big comparison base from last year, which we all knew it was an impossible base. So our gross margin contracted by 220 bps this quarter. Of that contraction, 1.6% was in retailing due to a lower price increase. So the price increase last year was 11.8. This year was 3.1. So the inflationary gain in inventories was much lower. And in 4Bio, the effect was even more pronounced. Because 4Bio only gets the lower tier of the price increase for categories with no generics, the 4Bio had an average price increase of 1.4% versus 11.8 next year. So next year, not only the average was much higher, but it was linear across all therapeutic segments, including specialty products with no generics. So 4Bio pressured our consolidated margins by 30 bps. And then there's an additional 20 bps effect from the net present value adjustment because interest rates are much lower now. This is a non-cash effect. It's only an accounting effect, so it doesn't affect valuation. Here on the right, I mean, our cash cycle was 70 bps higher than last year, so it's pretty in line. And obviously the fact that revenue growth was more modest because of April, it affects also the cash cycle level. So, but it's a normal kind of variation that you have from quarter to quarter. On page 9, we talk about operating expenses, and this was really the highlight of the quarter and probably the highlight of the year. We achieved an unprecedented dilution of 60 bps in our operating expenses. I mean, if you get back in time, just after the merger, we had 3 years with significant expense pressure. Then we have 2011, 12, 13. 14, 15, and 16, we managed to maintain our margins on a more flattish basis. So this is the first time where we see a material expense dilution. And the great thing here, as I will highlight, is that this dilution is absolutely structural, and we can expect this dilution to be sustained going forward. I think it also highlights the management capacity, the company's capacity to adapt its expense base in an environment in which revenues grew less than expected, in which inflation is lower. I think it's a great achievement, whatever angle we look from. So detailing here what happened behind this dilution. So we diluted labor expenses by 10 bps, acquiring fees by 10 bps, pre-operational expenses by 10 bps, corporate by 10 bps, and 4Bio operating leverage by 5 bps. So there is a list of 50 bps structural dilutions. Then we have 10 bps of logistics, 10 bps of marketing, and 10 bps of electricity, which may or not repeat itself. And then, on top of that, we faced a major pressure in rentals of 30 bps. And what happens here is that two-thirds of our contracts, they got readjusted in the second semester of last year when the IGPM had an average of 9.5%. Right now, IGPM in June, last 12 months, is at a negative 0.8%. So obviously, as we move forward in the year and as we start renewing this contract again, we will see this pressure falling down. I don't mean that there won't be any pressure or that we can dilute. That's not my point. But certainly, if there is any residual pressure, it shouldn't be 30 bps. So as you can see from these numbers, this is a very solid and structural trend that will carry forward and which will pave the way for continued margin expansion in the next few quarters. Getting back here to page 10, our EBITDA margin fell from 10.4 to 8.9. So we're talking 150 bps of pressure, which breaks down in 220 bps margin loss. And this was a loss that was highly anticipated. We all knew we would get to this point in the second quarter of this year. But we managed to mitigate that pressure with 60 bps of expense dilution. Another way to look at the quarter's numbers is that let's imagine this is a non-seasonal quarter, right? Let's say it was a quarter with 28.7 or 28.8 of gross margin, which was the gross margin we posted over the last two quarters. If that were the case, our EBITDA margin would be 8.3%. 8.3% is a much higher EBITDA margin than we posted in the previous two quarters, which were 7.4 and 7.6, which were very welcomed by the market. So obviously, we're posting a margin pressure versus last year. Obviously, there's some reaction from the sell side based on that. But in my view, if we forget the past and we focus on this quarter and on what it is and what it means and what it implies forward, it's a very nice margin. And just by comparing with the previous two quarters, even if you take out 70 bps of inflationary gain, it's a much better margin. The other thing is that the calendar effect that we had in April shouldn't repeat itself. So on a structural basis, Our revenues are around 17, are growing something like 17%. In the case of May and June, it was 17.4%. So the structural growth is preserved on an environment in which inflation is 3%. So with sound growth going forward, with great expense dilution, and with a solid normal gross margin that has nothing wrong in it, I think the trends, as I mentioned, are very, very, very positive. Page 11, net income fell from net margin 5.4 to 4.1, so 140 dips of pressure driven by the lower EBITDA margin. We had a slightly negative free cash flow of $47 million in the quarter, with a total cash flow that was negative by $134 million in the quarter. Obviously, we had higher interest in interest on equity than we had, for example, last year. Finally, our share has significantly appreciated in the year, so we have it's gone up by 14.6% versus only 4.4% for the Ibovespa, with a very good average trading volume of R$91 million. So for those shareholders who invested in Drogasil's IPO, and we have several of them still with us, they have had an annual return of 28.7%. And for those who entered the Rai IPO, and we have also plenty of them still around, they have achieved 33.7% of annual return on their investment. So I'll now pass to Marcilio, and then we'll get back to Q&A. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Eugenio. Okay, I want to talk on page 14. Let's talk about the quarter. Always, and you guys and the investor ask us about what's the trend for 2017. We always talk to you that we don't know the trend for 2017, but we know that the second quarter is difficult, and this is the second quarter, okay? We know that the sales, when we have the annual price cap, you'll be the number one challenge, and you have another challenge that the April sales, which three long holidays in a single month. Instead of this one, we know that we have a very, very quarter for us, because we know the new revenue growth that you expect for the future will be 17%, and better for mature store will be between, like the inflation, the same manner in the past, okay, between 4 and 3% every month. But what we have to look in this quarter, I think the expense dilution, this is the best part of the quarter. We worked since the end of 2015 in the labor. We worked to reduce the turnover, to train better the people, to work with the carrier for the people in the stores, and also to change the staffing. And you are doing this always looking for the NPS, the Net Promoter Score that you have in the store, we call Atendômetro. Looking for if the customer satisfaction is good or not. And this helps us to reduce the team in the stores and keep the same record in Atendomas. We are very proud about this number, and we know this number will be good for us in the future. The other good expansion that the expense that we dilution is the pre-operational expense. We open a store not like a crazy guys. We open stores like every month open 15, 20 stores. In stable base, opening 200 stores in years with the same quality in the past. This helps us also to improve our process to open stores and to dilute these expenses also. This helps us. In the rentals that pressured us this quarter, we already negotiated for more than 600 contracts, and this will be diluted in the next quarter. We hope so, okay? But what's important for us also, we have many transformations initiatives coming. The new loyalty program for high-end Brazil, we all set all the counts. We have only São Paulo State to finish. We are doing this in the end of September, and it's doing very well. And we know that it can help us more sales for the future. We just entered with a new pricing platform. This will help us in HPC and OTC items. Help only, we can change the price not only by stores, but also by store formats. This is completely new for our market, and this helps us for not only this year, but maybe for the next year. And the new thing that we did also, we closed the new Drogasil store identity. We did more than 10 stores as renovation, and are planning to do 50 stores this year. only top stores. This can help us for the sales in the future also. We opened our store in Ceará, Fortaleza, with this new format, and it's doing very well. When you open this Ceará, we are planning to close all the plan for the Northeast area, the important region for us, that we started in 2012, in this year. The next states will be Maranhão and Piauí also for this year. And with all these plans and the expense solution, we are very confident about the future, and we know we'll have better results in the future also. Now we are ready for the question.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you'd like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. Mr. Joseph Giordano from JP Morgan would like to pose a question.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. I would like to understand a little bit more about the competitive landscape, right? So we see some of your competitors, particularly from the Northeast, coming to a more extensive, to the São Paulo region, to your core market, while you are growing on top of their core market. So I'd like to understand how this is playing out, so if you see some refraction from competition in terms of pricing or things like that. Thank you.
Joseph, thanks for the question. I mean, overall, we think the competitive landscape is normal. I think the only material change is obviously in Brasília, where we had a nearly bankrupt competitor without any merchandise, and they were acquired. They now have inventory, so obviously they recover some of their sales, but we're still doing really well on an absolute basis. On a competitive basis, then it's slightly tougher. But that's the only material change, that the fact that Brazil Pharma was in deep distress, in the case of Rosario, now it's much better. Obviously, I mean, we're not the only chain expanding. We have other chains expanding. This is not new. I mean, if you look back, every time we have faced competition, so competition is not new to us. I think you mean Extra Pharma going down, and obviously they're aggressive, they're opening stores. But I think we have dealt very well with those, because these are markets, especially in the Southeast, especially São Paulo and so on, where we have been for a very long time. We have the best locations, we have the best execution, we have very strong brand awareness. So we haven't felt any major pressure. And I mean, if you consider the size of São Paulo, where we have 150 stores in the state, I mean, the number of new stores open is not material. I think, for example, Macedo was referring to the Northeast. What's happening in Fortaleza, it's a great signal for the company, because Fortaleza was supposed to be a tough market. It's the home market of Pague Menos, which is a chain we respect. Extra Pharma came there much before us, and they have a very good, well-entrenched presence there. And still coming late to the party, we were able to, obviously we're talking 4 stores, we're talking 1-2 weeks, so it's very early, but the initial numbers are very encouraging. And I think they are a testament to the strength of the execution of the format and of the locations. I think the main difference there is that even though we're coming after everybody, we're still getting locations that are better than the ones our competitors have grabbed before us. And when we get those locations, which are actually very expensive locations, but we have a format and an execution that can monetize that. So when you compound that kind of location with our execution, we have the lowest stockouts in the market, we have competitive prices, I think our people are better trained. So in the end, I think we're offering a better alternative for the consumer, and the consumer is coming to us even in a difficult market like that. So obviously the same also translates to other markets in which we even, on top of that, we have the advantage of being either the native chain like in São Paulo or of being a first mover. For example, if you talk about Recife, we got to Recife at least 2 years before. We got to Salvador at least 4 years before. So we have the best locations, we have a strong brand awareness, we have a great operation, and we are not feeling any pressure. I'm not saying that they cannot be successful. I think there is space in the market. I think that we see the execution improving. We respect them. But we are not paying the bill here. That's not right.
And, Jean, thank you. A very good point.
open stores, not all location. People are important. We are doing much better in people right now than we did in 2012 when we started in Salvador. The people is much more training, prepared to serve the customer in Fortaleza or even in other new states that are coming for the future.
Perfect. Thank you. And just if I could explore a little bit more on the efficiency gains on the expense side, what should we expect for the second half of the year? You mentioned a little bit about utilities and rentals. So how should we see particularly the rentals line, right? Because the IGPM is trending zero or slightly negative at this point. Thank you.
We are seeing major expense pressure in rentals, and I think this expense pressure will progressively fall down. I mean, if you compare, for example, next quarter, I don't know how many contracts we have been negotiated, so I don't think it's a big impact. But then you get to the fourth quarter, I think it's already better. Then when you get to next year with all contracts we need, then it's certainly better. So my view is, of those dilutions, I think we have at least something like 50 bips that are highly structural. That 30 bips that can repeat or not, we'll see. And then there is rentals, which is pressuring 30 bips, and I think that pressure will start falling back. I don't necessarily mean that we dilute rentals, but I think it's difficult to dilute rentals. But even if you have a lower pressure than now, the rest of the dilution, they are enough to position us very well for margin expansion. When you think about the third quarter, last year, our third quarter gross margin, I think it was 100 bits higher than normal because of the residual effect of the price increase. I think even with that, we have a fair shot at being similar, at not losing margin in the third quarter. I would expect to try to be around what we did last year, but obviously last year we had still a big residual of the price increase on the third quarter, while now it will be fully structural. And I certainly expect to have a very good dilution in the fourth quarter. Our target is to try to defend the margin we did last year. We did 8.4 actually, consolidated. I don't know if we'll make 8.4. Maybe we do 8.2, 8.3, maybe even 8.4 is not out of the table. But the difference is, let's say the margin is similar or is slightly lower. The main point is that we did that margin last year with a very specific factor and no recurring factor, which was the price increase. Now we're doing kind of the same margin on a fully structural basis. So I think it's a huge achievement for the company.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
As a reminder, in order to ask a question, please press star 1. Mr. Guilherme Assis from Brasil Plural would like to pose a question.
Hi, Eugenio. Hi, Marcio. Hello, everyone. Thanks for taking my follow-up question here. Eugenio, looking at the numbers, like, I'd like to understand what is the dynamics in terms of the breakdown of the same-store sales in terms of traffic and ticket. I know that we had the bad comps, from the tough comps from last year, and also the price cap increase. But I think more specifically, I'd like to understand how is consumer behavior and how is traffic playing out given the slowdown on the macro front. I know you are in a very resilient industry, but I'd like to know perhaps maybe for the health and beauty products, if you're seeing lower traffic or lower or smaller basket for those kind of items. So can you give us any color on that? And I think related to that, if you can also talk a little bit about any potential trades in terms of channel, if you think you're losing market share to other channels like more discount retailers or anything like that, more in the CFT or the health and beauty products. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Guilherme, I didn't understand the second part, but I'll start with the first, and then I'll ask you to repeat the second part of your question. I mean, obviously, if you look at the average of the quarter, the volumes are negative, very much influenced by April. But if you look May and June, I don't have the exact figures in front of me, but I think it's something like neutral volumes at mature stores. with the effect coming from pricing. So it's kind of the historic effect we have always seen. Obviously, an expansion like ours cannibalizes existing stores to some extent, and the volume cannibalization is much higher than the revenue cannibalization. So if for us, if mature stores, we don't look too much at volumes, to be very frank, but if mature stores, they are neutral in volume and we grow inflation, for us, that's a good number. And over April and over May and June, we got 3.4% for mature stores versus 3% for inflation. So that for us, it's a good number. For the average, then it's lower because of labor, as I mentioned. In terms of category dynamics, I think HPC is still affected by the Zika virus effect of last year. But even without the Zika virus effect, HPC is falling behind the rest of the mix. The funny part is that when we look at the upscale items like makeup, like skincare, like haircare, they're doing really well. There's nothing wrong with that. So it's not discretionary purchasing affecting that. But we see issues on massive categories, things like diaper, things like soap, things like haircare. I think it's influenced by a cautious consumer. It's also influenced by a cross-channel dynamic. So we've seen supermarkets being very aggressive in some of those categories. So we have a challenge here. In the end, I think the whole effect that we have from the new loyalty program with exclusive offers for the whole chain, I think it will help us fight back on beauty. And eventually, when the crisis goes away, we may see beauty getting back to life. But in the end, we can't complain about the environment. We can't complain about the consumer because I think our revenue trends on a structural basis, they're very healthy. Okay. So if you could repeat the second part of your question.
Well, I think I already answered it. It was about the trade-off in channels. If you're seeing perhaps you're losing market share to some more aggressive discount retailers, I think you answered that. So yes. That's clear. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Luciano Campos from Bradesco would like to pose a question.
Hi, Eugenio. Hi, everybody. Just follow-ups in two topics that your guys already discussed. On the SG&A part, Eugenio, how would you overlay the labor reform to your expectations of, SG&A as a contributor to your margins? I think perhaps 2017 is not a timing. There is no timing for that yet. But what are your views for that in 2018, assuming that the tact that we saw for the labor reform is not changed and it's kept as it is? That's my first question. And second, back to HPC, based on your answer from the previous question, would you change anything in your strategy? Would you try to reduce exposure to some basic HPC to increase in another? Is it part of the strategy already? Just two comments on that. Thank you.
Okay, Luciano, thanks for the question. So the labor reform is obviously positive. It gives us more flexibility in terms of staffing, for example. But I don't have an answer yet as far as what the impact can be. We are still studying internally and trying to see what we can do, how we can improve. But it's only positive.
And Luciano Martino here. I think labor is good for all the retail industry here. We are a labor-intensive business, okay? And we know, but it is a journey. Starts right now to understand what is changing, and you can see very, very good results, not right now, but in the future. Not only in cost, but also in productivity to people working in stores. I think maybe next year we can be more aware about what happened with the numbers about labor reform.
Yes.
But it's a very, very good trend for us.
It's good, and we're working on that. On your second part in HPC, I mean, what happens is I think we always try to separate what is strategy from what is short-term trends. So, if you think about the mix, what we're doing, we're coming out of a kind of a one-size-fits-all approach and customizing our mix way more based on store format. The most visible part
it's on the more upscale stores. And then there we are entering with makeup, we're strengthening skincare, we're premiumizing hair care, but we're doing that because of opportunity, because of fit, not necessarily because the massive categories are not doing well, although obviously it helps offsetting those trends. But at the same time, we have a huge initiative in popular stores in terms of improving our execution in those stores, in getting our popular stores more popular. So on that aspect, it goes to the opposite direction. Obviously, upscale stores for us is much bigger than popular stores. But what we're doing in popular stores is very important. We're getting a lot of learnings from Farmazil, from HPC and Farmazil into those stores. So this is part of making our merchandising better and ideally suited for every kind of neighborhood, for every kind of consumer.
Okay, thank you, Eugenio. Thank you, Marcelo.
Mr. Joseph Giordano from JP Morgan would like to pose a question.
Hi, just a follow-up question. Thanks for taking it. Look at the capital structure of the company. Recently issued debt to strengthen the long-term position and finance capex. Having that said, and particularly assuming that your store should continue to mature at very healthy levels, should we expect higher cash back to shareholders, so basically higher dividend in the short term? Thank you.
Joseph, thanks for the question. I mean, for us, an ideal capital structure is a neutral capital structure. As you know, we don't want to get to leverage the company. We don't believe in leverage in an unstable country like Brazil, especially for a high-growth company with a huge consolidation opportunity like we have. So our growth demands us to have more flexibility and to be conservative. It doesn't mean that leverage has to be zero. I mean, we have been doing 0.2, 0.3, and that's healthy. If you get to 0.5, that's also okay. But we wouldn't typically go ahead of one time EBITDA, so that's part of our strategy. In terms of future capital allocation, obviously, if we grow 200 stores a year, after a while, we start generating free cash flow. The question is, how much can we reinvest of that free cash flow in the business for growth and for productivity? For example, the main initiative would be Farmazil. We're starting the rollout of Farmazil. We should open this year something like 10 Farmazil stores. If they do well, we do more next year. If they do well, we do more the other year. So Farmazil, it's a capital allocation prospect that nobody is yet contemplating their models. And correctly so, because it's too early. But Farmazil will absorb capital. We just don't know how much capital. For example, as we have Drogasil, the new format, depending on what happens with those conversions, if we see a nice sales momentum, we can be more aggressive and investing more in renovations, for example. So there are opportunities that may arise in that regard that will require more capital than we're deploying now. But let's say if we don't see an opportunity to productively invest that surplus, my answer is that we would increase distribution.
Thank you.
Thanks.
It appears to be no further questions. Now, I'll turn the conference back to the company for their final remarks.
Okay, first of all, thank you all for attending our conference call. I mean, obviously, this quarter marks that moment we all knew would come at some point, where we'll have to face the huge comp base of the second quarter last year. So there's no surprise here. This is something that we knew already when we did the call last year, that this quarter would arrive. And with 11.8% of average price increase last year versus low 3-point-something this year, obviously that's an impossible margin to compete. There was a margin peak, and there is nothing wrong with the margin of this quarter. What happened is that the margin we had 1 year ago was extraordinary and it couldn't be repeated. For me, I think a lot of people get to compare only quarter to quarter, and I think that's very myopic. I think obviously quarter to quarter has its importance, but we have to see quarter versus on a sequential basis versus previous quarters, and more important than anything, understand what the quarter means on its own and what it implies to the future. I mean, obviously, If this quarter was a non-seasonal quarter with no inflationary gain of inventory, our gross margin would be something like 28.7 or 28.8. Our EBITDA would have been 8.3% on a non-cyclical basis. 8.3 in a non-cyclical quarter probably means something like 8.5 on an annualized basis. So in the end, we are now at a level of performance identical to the one of last year. But last year was absolutely driven by a non-recurring factor, while this year it's fully structural. So this will pave the way for us to keep expanding margins as we go on. So we see the margin of this quarter with very favorable lights, I think probably differently from a big portion of the sell side. And in terms of revenues, obviously 16% is not a good number, but if you take out these non-recurring effects on the April calendar, we look at May and June, 17.45% is a perfectly normal number in an environment when inflation is 3%. Obviously, we used to do 24% with 9 of inflation. If we do 17 with 3 of inflation, we're talking similar number, just slightly below. We're growing 200 stores this year, same as last year. So it's obviously that it could be slightly lower. There's no problem in that. So we see 17% as a normal number for us, as a number that works for the company. If you can do better, that's even better. That's great. And we're working to create optionality with new loyalty program, with Drogasil renovations, with pricing platform, with Pharmazil, with a ton of other initiatives that we have in place. But there is nothing wrong with the margin of the quarter, and there is nothing wrong with the May and June sales trends. So we believe this will pave the way for us to be in the game next quarter, to be with similar margins to last year when there was still a big positive residue from the price increase, and to expand margins from the fourth quarter onwards and paving the way for a great 2018, which is the most important. So thank you all for your support. And I'll, just before concluding, I'd like to highlight what we have planned in terms of investor relations. We have a big schedule ahead of us. First of all, we are issuing the third quarter numbers on October 26th. I would like also to highlight the RD Day in November 10, 2017 in the morning here in Sao Paulo. I mean, this is the only opportunity you have to meet every senior executive of the company, in which we go beyond the numbers and we discuss the initiatives and the strategies behind them. So I'm sure that if you take the time and the investment to come here and to attend, you're not regret. I think we can give a lot of visibility on the things we're doing and much more color than a usual IR interaction can provide. And finally, we have a busy a big conference schedule ahead of us. Two conferences here in Sao Paulo. The Santander Conference, August 15 to 17. The JP Morgan Conference, August 22nd. And finally, two events outside of Brazil. We'll be, Gabriel and myself, in London at the Morgan Stanley Conference, September 11 to 13. And also in New York, November 14 to 15, on Bradesco's Conference. So that's it. Thank you very much for your support and for attending this call.
RD's conference call is finished. Have a nice day.